I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Don Edwards. He's a historian, author, and musicologist specializing in cowboy music. He's been called America's cowboy balladeer. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you.
And we're also joined here in the cafe by Tom Leach, who is curator of the press at the Palace of the Governors, and Kate Nelson with the New Mexico History Museum. Now, Don Edwards will be here singing and doing his cowboy ballads and much more on Sunday, the 10th of March at 2 o'clock at the New Mexico History Museum Auditorium. And there is a show opening, which is called Cowboys Real and Imagined, that opens on the 14th of April. Let's talk for a moment before we get to Don. What's that show about, this cowboy show at the New Mexico History Museum?
This is probably the biggest show that we've put on, an original show, since the opening of the museum in 2009, and we had Fashioning New Mexico. Cowboys Real and Imagined begins with the Spanish vaquero tradition in the late 1500s and carries the visitor up through modern day cowboys. And along the way, we're going on trail rides, we're getting to know some of the outlaw cowboys, we're becoming acquainted with how Teddy Roosevelt, Owen Wister, Frederick Remington, and Charles Russell turned cowboys from a sort of disgraced profession into the American hero. And we talk about cowboy music, cowboy movies, cowboy poets, and we end the whole exhibit with a question of, in a volatile global market, in a time of climate change, can cowboys survive?
What is the role of the press at the Palace of the Governors?
Well, I would have to go back almost 10 years shortly after I started here at the museum, and I learned the story of Jack Thorpe and his book, Songs of the Cowboys. It was the, I think, quintessential cowboy songbook. It was certainly the first, and it was printed in Estancia, New Mexico in 1908, and as it turns out, it was printed on the press that is sort of featured at the Palace Press. And so that sort of became something that I just felt like had to be told, and told often and well. And so we started printing a new edition of Songs of the Cowboys and really trying to give it the honored place in history and book history that it deserves.
Don Edwards, you are well known across the country for the music that you perform. How did you get into cowboy music?
Well, actually, I've loved it since I can remember. I mean, it's just something I always had to listen to all my entire life. I guess I got started because most of the course, naturally, the 19th century cowboy was gone by the time I got around here, you know, and so I really got it from listening to phonograph records and things like that. My dad had a huge record collection, and I found a couple of cowboy records, one by Bill Bender and the other one by Carl Sandburg. And I played and played and played and played these records, and they were the first two or three songs I ever, one was Goodbye Old Paint, and the other one was Whoopie Tie I-O Get Along Little Dogies. And
right.
I just loved it, and it was real easy to play. You see, when I was teaching myself how to play, it was just little three-chord songs, you know. And I just wore out those records amongst hundreds of records my dad had. He loved every genre of music there was at the time, and they're all on 78 records, and I've still got them, actually. But that was my introduction to cowboy music, because there was no stars of cowboy music like there was in Western music, like Gene Autry and Roy Rogers and Tex Ritter and Rex Allen, things like that, you know. So it was quite popular, the cowboy music, but there was no particular artist that did them. Tex Ritter was probably the closest, that was a very well-known artist that stayed the closest to the cowboy music than any of the rest of them.
I would think that, I mean, you've been collecting these songs, and I imagine that probably a lot of them would have been lost if people didn't collect them, if people like you didn't collect them and get them from perhaps old-timers who still remember them. But some of these songs were recorded, some of those recordings get lost, and some of them weren't even recorded in the first place. So what has this process been like for you all these years?
It's something I've always loved to do. I love the stories as much as I love the songs and the history of them. And I'm talking when I was just a little kid. I just love those stories that they told about them. kind of like the theme that there you're carrying on is the, you know, real and imagined, you know. I mean, that's the West I lived in, both real and imagined, you know. I mean, I knew the difference between the real cowboy and the so-called professional singing cowboy, you know.
Right,
there was
right.
a big difference between the two of them. But the music and the stories of those old songs were just so intriguing to me that I looked at it. I always have. I've always been a folk singer because cowboy music was always a part of their repertoire. You know, every folk singer knew cowboy songs, not commercial ones, but the old time ones. And right. so that kind of kept that alive through the 60s. But I've always loved it, and then the thing I turned toward that because I had no desire really to be a big star. I mean, that sounds weird, you know, because a lot of people say, "Oh, I want to sell a million records." I couldn't have cared less, you know. And I just wanted to play that music until I was told by other people what I was doing. I was just doing it out of the pure love of it, you know. But it was something that was disappearing. And so I said, "Gosh, you know, that if your stories go away and if your songs go away, this is the difference between us as being here for, what, I don't know, 300 years maybe now, and the native people who were here for 12,000 years. And that's because they handed down their stories and their songs and part of their culture. And even in Appalachia today, there's still little places, little small communities and things that still have songs that have never been written down. These little kids are learning songs that have never been written down on a piece of paper. And I just took that over into the cowboy music, you know, and just... I just do what I do, you know, and I love doing it, and I'm glad there's people out there that like it as well, you know, because it is a part of our history.
So let's talk more about the real and imagined for a moment. I mean, the cowboy music that you sing and that you collect, I imagine some of it is what you might call like 19th century authentic cowboy music, and some of it is like a romanticizing of the cowboy mythology.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. And the songs have been worked and reworked, and you know, and people take verses of them and stick them in another song, and it's just an old tradition, you know, that they've just been passed around. And the more written Western songs were, you know, I sing a lot of those too as well, and but those are the ones that most people remember. They don't remember the old ones because most of those old cowboy songs were not documented until later. If it wasn't for people like Jack Thorpe, like Tom was just saying about Jack Thorpe, if it wasn't for him, nobody would probably have heard about it. But by passing it around from one cow camp to another, these songs sort of got, they grew. In other words, like Thorpe was saying, there was no place where a cowboy, a working cowboy, would know a song all the way through. And so they just would pick up a verse here, and the collector would pick up a verse there in different places, and they'd just sort of compile them. And so John Lomax, basically 2 years after Thorpe came along, he put out a very popular book, The Cowboy Songs and Frontier Ballads. And when he did that, that brought around the popularity, like radio, early days of radio. It was Lomax's book they were using because he took the liberties to kind of dress them for the to make them palatable to the general audience, you know, the general public. But the old cowboy songs that Thorpe collected, he collected them just like he heard them.
And he would talk about how fast he had to work to write down what he heard maybe the next day or whenever he could get to pen and paper. And in particular, Tom, there's a story about trying to document some African-American cowboys.
Yeah, that was the start of the whole story. Jack's job was, he was a working cowboy, and he was rounding up strays, and one night wandered into a camp of black cowboys down near Roswell, and they were singing songs, and there was one of the songs called Dodgin' Joe, and he wrote down two verses of it, and that's all he got. But by the time he woke up the next morning, he had decided that this was important, that somebody had to write these songs down, and he sent a letter to his boss, said, "I quit," and he spent the next 2 years riding 2,000 miles all over the West, going into cow camps, collecting these songs.
Amazing.
Doesn't that sound like the life?
Yeah, and these are the songs that we learned in sixth grade music class back in public school.
Well, that's exactly it.
That's right. And what you were saying, Tom, was about the black cowboys that were singing in that cow camp, I think personally Thorpe had heard a lot of cowboy songs, you know, in various times in his life and never thought much of it. But when he heard that camp, Addison Jones's cow camp, and those guys were all black, but it was that what they were singing, there was no genre of the blues, you know what I mean, back then. But that's what Thorpe was hearing. He was hearing the interpretation of those songs. And to back that up, a man by the name of Will C. Barnes, who has written several books, he was a historian, he was a author, he was a soldier, but he took the time to write it down in a journal. And most of the old cowboys couldn't have cared less. They were out there for having a good time, and they, you know, that was the least important thing on their books, you know. But what Will Barnes did was he observed that when he went to these cow towns, he said he listened to professional musicians. And this was right after the Civil War. And a lot of these ex-slaves and things like that, and even non-slaves, went west. And there was a lot of them said, I want to be a cowboy, just like anybody else. So this is the life they took, but the music that they brought with them, and it mixed that music up. And Will Barnes said that of all the singers that he'd heard on the trail were these professional musicianers, he called them. He said they were songsters and musicianers. And he said they sang, they fixed up these cowboy ballads to make them more accessible to other people as well. The best of these professional musicians were black. And he said they played guitars, violins, banjos, and they were the ones that saved this cowboy music on the range, is what he said. He quoted that.
For the exhibit, Cowboys Real and Imagined, we'll have a lot of cowboy music and oral histories and poetry throughout it. Jack Leffler, a wonderful man and a great oral historian, has been gathering renewed performances of some of these classic songs. He's pulled on some of the Lomax recordings and then his own bank of audio that he's taken across New Mexico all these years.
Yes, he was telling me some about that, too. I was very interested in hearing about that. That's just wonderful. I just think it's wonderful what y'all are doing. I mean, it's just where we've kind of forgot our history, you know?
I think one of the things that's so interesting about it, too, is that there's so many different musical strains that go into this kind of cowboy music. I mean, you were talking about African-American music and the blues, and then I was listening to your song Cattle Call, and there's just bona fide yodeling in that.
Oh, yeah. That was influence of those touring, like the Tyrolean yodelers, you know, from Switzerland. You know, they came here in the 1850s. A lot of that was learned from them. I mean, I probably would pick up people like Jimmy Rogers that had probably heard some of that, you know. So that is a part of the cowboy music, but the old-timers always said it wasn't yodeling, it was howling and humming. That's how they thought of it as, you know. It says, we're just singing to cows till we got hoarse, you know.
Well, is there such a thing as contemporary cowboy music, or is it mostly...
Oh, yeah. No, there is. Today, yeah, uh-huh. There's a lot of great songwriters out there that, to this day, like Mike Fleming in California, Dave Stamian in California, Andy Hedges from out in Lubbock, Texas.
But, I mean, with great respect, are these people real cowboys?
Yeah. They're doing their story. And I think it's very commendable. Brent Hill from Utah, he's doing the same thing. And I say they're young. They're a lot younger than I am. I mean, they're in their 30s, you know, things like that. But I am very pleased to know that there's people carrying it on and writing new material because they have to write of their lifetime. I mean, of right now. You know, whereas most of my music is interpreted. I do write some, but it sounds sort of like the old stuff. But a lot of these newer artists that are coming out now are doing a great job. They're great writers and great players. I think it's wonderful, but there's only one thing that I stress so much, but a lot of times it falls on deaf ears, is don't forget the old stuff. You know, don't throw that away for the new. I mean, you've got to write new material because you've got to tell your story now, you know, to keep that alive. But you've also got to carry on the other stories as well and the songs. But very few people, that's where it comes into being that I'm 74 years old, and I've been at this 52, 53 years, and there are very few people coming on that know the old stuff. Like you get people like Ian Tyson, Ramblin' Jack Elliott, people like that has a huge repertoire of cowboy songs. I try to explain it to the younger group to that, you know, you've got to write your story and bring it forward to now, but don't forget the old stuff. You know, it doesn't hurt to do, you know, Goodbye Old Paint in your set, you know?
Right,
and just
right.
Tell them this is old traditional song. And that's what we did. I mean, the older guys, we always did those old songs because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be here.
Don Edwards is a historian, author, and musicologist. His specialty is cowboy music. He's called America's Cowboy Balladeer, and he will be here in Santa Fe this Sunday, the 10th of March at 2 in the afternoon at the New Mexico History Museum Auditorium. And Tom Leach has been with us. He's the curator of the Press at the Palace of the Governors, and Kate Nelson from the New Mexico History Museum. The exhibition that opens on April 14th is called Cowboys, Real and Imagined. Thank you, everybody, for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
If you want to reserve a ticket for Sunday's event, where should people call?
982-9543, or you can log on to newmexicocreates.org.
newmexicocreates.org, and we're going to go out with a cowboy ballad.
Little Joe the Wrangler will wrangle nevermore. His days with the Ramuda, they are o'er. 'Twas a year ago last April when he rode into our camp, a little Texas stray and all alone. 'Twas late in the evening when he rode up to the herd on a little old brown pony he called Chaw. With broken shoes and overalls, a tougher looking kid you never in your life had ever saw. His saddle was a southern cack built many years ago, an old Casper on one foot idly hung. With his hot roll in a cotton sack loosely tied behind, and a canteen from his saddle horn was slung. He said he had to leave his home, his pa had married twice, and his new ma whipped him every day or two. So he saddled up old Chaw one night and he lit a shut this way. Now he's trying hard to paddle his own canoe. He said if we would give him work, he'd do the best he could, though he didn't know straight up about a cow. So the boss, he cut him out a mount, and he kindly put him on, for he sort of liked the little kid somehow. Well, he learned to jingle horses, and to know them one and all, and to get them in by daybreak if he could, and to follow the chuck wagon, and to always hitch the team, and to help the cocinero rustle wood. We'd driven to Red River, the weather being fine. We were camped out on the south side in a bend. When a norther commenced to blowin', we doubled up our guard, for it took all hands to hold the cattle in. Now little Joe the Wrangler was called out with the rest, and though the kid had scarcely reached the herd, when the cattle they stampeded like a hailstorm long they fled, and we were all a-riding for the lead. Amidst the streaks of lightning there was one horse up ahead, trying to stop the leaders in their speed. Was little Joe the Wrangler with a slicker o'er his head? He was riding old Blue Rocket in the lead. Now we finally got a milling and kind of quieted down, and the extra guard back to the wagon road. But there was one a-missing, and we knew it at a glance, was our little Texas stray, poor Wrangler Joe. Next morning, just at daybreak, we found where Rocket fell, down in a washout 20 feet below. And beneath his horse, mashed to a pulp, his spur had rung the knell for our little Texas stray, poor Wrangler Joe. Now little Joe the Wrangler, he'll wrangle nevermore, and his days with the Ramuda, they are o'er. 'Twas a year ago last April when he rode into our camp, just a little Texas stray and nothing more.